Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So you know what may even be more tricky than a conversation about race? A conversation about post-race. In her new book, Emory University political scientist Andra Gillespie explores the role of the black politician in quote-unquote post-racial America. She focuses on Newark Mayor Cory Booker, but there are lessons for Barack Obama and a host of other young black politicians and America as a whole. Professor Gillespie, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
And you probably didn't expect Cory Booker to be part of the defining political story the week your book came out, did you?
No, I didn't. So it's actually really interesting that that book came out halfway between the fire rescue and the Meet the Press interview.
That's right. So one more time, let's play that Booker comment on Meet the Press last Sunday about the tone of the campaign.
This kind of stuff is nauseating to me on both sides. It's nauseating to the American public. Enough is enough. Stop attacking private equity. Stop attacking Jeremiah Wright. This stuff has got to stop.
So I guess in the context of your book, let's not focus, as much of the nation has, on whether this was Cory Booker going off message in an election season or the role of private equity. Instead, I'm curious to get your take in the context of your book about the way in which he makes that equivalency between the attacks on private equity and the rumors about Jeremiah Wright and implications that Obama doesn't love his country because he was in Jeremiah Wright's congregation for 23 years. Were you surprised to hear that out of Cory Booker's mouth?
Well, not exactly. I think in that moment he was conflating the two attacks as just being nasty attacks. So I don't think he was actually taking the Jeremiah Wright story on its face and looking at sort of how insidious that attack particularly is and versus the substance of the Bain Capital attack, regardless of whether or not you agree with it. And I think he was, in general, decrying the tone. And he personally doesn't like negative campaigning. It's not that he's never used it before, but he is personally averse to that. And I remember when I interviewed him for my book, I talked about somebody else's negative campaign, and he reacted in a way that I was somewhat surprised by. I mean, he was actually sort of viscerally put off by the fact that somebody would, you know, go for the jugular and go below the belt. And so it's part of Cory's persona to be nice, to try to win people over with charm, to have cross-racial appeal, to try to bridge boundaries. And so the idea that somebody could be really partisan or that somebody could, you know, go after somebody no holds barred is something that he really tries to avoid at all costs. And so I think that that was really influencing what he said and why he felt that, you know, both sides becoming, as he would see it, as being uncivil is not a good thing for American politics.
And what do you think of the whole story of Barack Obama going into, then out of, Jeremiah Wright's congregation as perhaps an analogy to the theme of your book? Is it a generational change in that respect to a time when, from a time when civil rights and kind of the old-time black church with the heart of black politics to a time when it's more secular, more business-oriented, Barack Obama, Cory Booker, Adrian Fenty, and we could go on.
Right. I mean, so I think part of it's generational. And then the generational difference has a lot to do with socialization and experience. So if you come from Jeremiah Wright's generation, and Jeremiah Wright's family grew up not far from where I grew up in Virginia, you were socialized in a very different way. And so your racial politics are very much informed by segregation and very much informed by the civil rights struggle and the need to be confrontational. If you're somebody younger, like Cory Booker or a Barack Obama or Harold Ford or an Adrian Fenty or whoever, you were born right at the end of the civil rights movement or you were born after the civil rights movement. So you've been able to spend your entire life in integrated environments, especially if you were blessed with upper middle class black parents. And so you've had a chance to go to the best suburban schools. You've had a chance to go to the best colleges in the country. You've had a chance to be completely socialized in a mainstream environment. And so the idea idea of being suspicious of outsiders, being suspicious of people who come from a different racial community is actually not been inbred in you. It's not been your experience. And so this generation of younger black politicians recognizes racism, wants to fight it, but the tools that they use are different because they haven't experienced the same type of negative socialization that older blacks experience.
So we have time for a few phone calls for Andrew Gillespie from Emory University, author now of this new book, which is called The New Black Politician, focusing primarily on Cory Booker and Newark, and as she says, in post-racial America. So African-American listeners, do you experience a generational change here? What do you think about that term, post-racial America? Booker and Obama don't talk very much about race in a direct way. Do you want to hear more direct talk about race in our politics? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Andrew Gillespie. And you want to tell us why you put that term post-racial America in your title?
Well, the dirty little secret of publishing is that authors have very little control over the title of their books.
Really? I never heard that before.
So that wasn't my decision, even though I now have two books that have post-racial in their title. So part of it's marketing. And I don't believe in post-racialism. And President Obama and Cory Booker don't believe in post-racialism. When they've been asked directly about this, they will acknowledge that America is not quite past race yet, just because they have the opportunity to serve in the offices in which they serve. But we're in a moment now that we are seeing blacks break glass ceilings and hold real political power, people are asking, well, what is the significance of having blacks in positions of power? And are we operating under the same racial caste system that under which we've operated, you know, for 400 years of our existence as a colony and as a country? So it's important for us to recognize that we're not where we used to be, but we're not quite where we need to be yet. But in 2008, as soon as Barack Obama, you know, became clear that he was going to be a viable presidential candidate, journalists started using the term post-racial, and so we now use it because it gets people's attention. Hopefully it draws them to the book so that we can explain why we're not quite past race. And I think the overall argument that I point out in the book is that for black politicians who employ what political scientists call deracialization, ones who use race-neutral campaign tactics and don't talk about race all the time, they actually usually have a problem because race still matters. So it either still matters to their black constituents, particularly if there are some class differences between the new black politician and the community that they seek to represent. And in some instances, they still have a problem with the mainstream community that embraces them because it ends up putting them into a box. So Cory Booker is alternately a superhero compared to his, you know, former rival Sharp James, who was sometimes cast as a supervillain. And you still have this notion of black politicians, whether they're deracialized or not, still kind of being defined in terms of their race and not completely being able to escape the caste of race. I mean, part of the reason why people had such a negative reaction to Cory Booker attacking Barack Obama was because it was a black politician attacking another black politician, and it looked like the Republicans seized upon his comments and Harold Ford's comments in particular, even though they included some white critics as well, to say that, see, Barack Obama's, you know, policies and his strategy is bad. Even black people are criticizing him. And so it means that race is actually still important. So, you know, I want all readers to be clear that, you know, we put post-racial in the title because it would get people's attention, not because we actually believe that post-racialism is a real phenomenon in the United States.
So here's President Obama trying to navigate that line just after being elected in early 2009. And I'm curious to get your reaction to this clip. You're probably very familiar with it. When asked about the significance of his election in racial terms.
Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, at the inauguration, I think that there was justifiable pride on the part of the country that we had taken a step to move us beyond some of the searing legacies of racial discrimination in this country. But that lasted about a day. And you know, right now, the American people are judging me exactly the way I should be judged. And that is, are we taking the steps to improve liquidity in the financial markets, create jobs, get businesses to reopen, keep America safe? And that's what I've been spending my time thinking about.
So here we are almost 4 years later. What are you thinking?
So, you know, President Obama has had to walk a very, very fine line in terms of being able to make sure that he reaches out and supports his African-American base, because the reality of it is that he got elected because minorities, people of color, turned out in record numbers to support his candidacy, and making sure that he appeals to the wide spectrum of the American public, who either may be skeptical of him because he is African-American or skeptical of him because he's a Democrat or perceived as being liberal. President Obama, of most young black politicians, has, you know, appears very comfortable in his skin. And he's done a really good job of balancing it, but even he has had some problems. I mean, there are critics amongst the African-American intelligentsia that says he hasn't done enough to reach out to African-Americans. In particular, they want targeted policies. And the problem with deracialized politicians is that they usually can't target policies toward African-Americans because they explicitly ran against that.
Tavis Smiley, Cornel West, others making that case.
Maxine Waters, those kinds of folks. And then on the other hand, when he has taken a step out in favor of race, he gets attacked from the right for appearing to be racist. And so even when you don't talk about race, we're still at a point in American history where people assume that it is still about race and they'll invoke it whenever it's convenient for them. So if we go back to Skip Gates or Shirley Sherrod or Trayvon Martin, President Obama has been criticized for his or his administration's response to all of those issues. You know, Gallup actually had a poll out during the Skip Gates incident, and his approval rating among whites dropped after he made the Cambridge Police Acted Stupidly comment. You know, they over-responded and overreacted to the Shirley Sherrod incident and then found out that, you know, the Breitbart tape had been doctored. And then in the Trayvon Martin incident, you know, Newt Gingrich famously, lambasted President Obama and saying by saying that he was trying to, you know, divide America by saying that Trayvon Martin would look like a son of his if he'd had a son. And so, you know, people are still very sensitive to these issues. And, you know, as a political scientist who doesn't have to run for office, it's really easy for me to say this, but we have to acknowledge those sensitivities and figure out how to deal with them directly as opposed to trying to talk around issues, because that's usually what ends up creating the types of powder keg situations that, you know, create unfortunate incidents and that actually create these very, very uncomfortable dialogues. And so if we just had them, you know, right at the beginning, it's like pulling a Band-Aid off. It's just easier to get it off first than to try to wait and take it off bit by bit.
Good description of a lot of those examples of the fault line. Our time is going by so quickly. We're only going to be able to get one caller on, and it's Joe in Hoboken. And Joe, we have 30 seconds for you. Hi there.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. The guest has done a great job at articulating the differences between what a Booker and an Obama of the world by not having to speak outright and vocalize the racial tensions and their opinions about it. However, what is their answer to calibrate what they're depoliticizing something that their constituency is looking to them every day to keep at the forefront, namely their minority African-American constituency?
So the question really is contingent on what level of office one is running for.
And
so
we've got 30 seconds left here, just so you know.
Sure, thanks. It's really risky for Booker at the local level because his constituent is half black. But as he moves on to higher office, that constituent becomes less and less black. So perhaps he can afford to lose more votes, but that's only contingent on him being able to make up for that with white votes. And that's actually more difficult than it looks, even when you have cross-racial appeal. So that's kind of the paradox of being able to do that.
Andrew Gillespie, political science professor at Emory University, is the author now of The New Black Politician, Cory Booker, Newark, and Post-Racial America. Thank you so much.
Thank you.